a creeping separateness. That's the problem. A creeping separateness. Every bride is so happy on her wedding day. She is thrilled with her man and certain that their marriage will be the best ever. But every wife that sits at a wedding knows what that girl is in for. Expectations will not be met. Passions will grow cold. Joy will turn to disappointment. He won't treat her like he's promising to treat her. She'll learn to cope, but she will not be happy. Willard Harley has worked with thousands of people in marital distress. He wrote a book called His Needs, Her Needs. And Harley says, when a husband and wife can't get along, we describe them as incompatible. Yet at one time, we would have called those same two people irresistible to each other. And because they found each other irresistible, they made a lifetime commitment in marriage. Marriage starts out as irresistible and only becomes incompatible as a couple leaves each other's needs unmet. When someone outside of marriage then offers to meet those needs, an affair starts. And then the new lover becomes irresistible, end quote. Leading us to the stats that one out of five couples that are getting married in New York this year will not be married 5 years from now. And one out of two marriages in New York that happened this year will be ended within 15 years. And yet, I have never officiated a wedding ceremony where the bride says, someday I will deny even ever loving him at all. But many end up doing that, and almost always because of a creeping separateness. Did you hear about the couple that was married 45 years? And the man said, honey, 45 years ago, we had a cheap apartment, a cheap car, we slept on a sofa bed, we watched a 10-inch black and white television, but I had a really hot 24-year-old wife. He said, now we have a $1 million home, we have a couple of nice cars, we have a big bed, a plasma TV, but I'm married to a 69-year-old wrinkly lady. I'm not sure you're holding up your end of the bargain. The wife looked at him and said, hey, go ahead, find yourself a 24-year-old, and I'll make sure you are again living in a cheap apartment, driving a cheap car, sleeping on a couch and watching a bad TV. Why does that happen? Why do people start out so good and end up so far apart? Every premarital counseling I have ever done includes proclamations like, so happy together, wildly in love, perfect for each other, not like others, happily ever after. That's what they say. They are so in love at the beginning, and they are so far from that, from each other at the end. And what happened in between is a creeping separateness. I know every story is different. I know there are exceptions to every rule. But for the most part, the problem with most marriages, in my opinion, is the guy. In America, the husband is in the driver's seat, literally and figuratively. It is a man's world, and guys get most of the breaks. I mean, he is called king of the castle. The world revolves around him. You're starring in your own movie, right, guys? It's your movie. Everybody else is just extras. Of course you hold the TV remote. You need time to unwind. If you have a chance to go golfing, you expect your wife to understand. Fishing trip this weekend, hey, you worked hard, you earned it. If you forget your anniversary, well, you know, that's the joke, right? You forget your anniversary. Check out some websites now and again. Just looking, it's what guys do. If you don't do laundry or cleaning or cooking a kids, well, that's not really a guy thing. And if you expect then your wife to still be there for you whenever you want, well, hey, it's what she signed up for, right? An online survey polled people to determine their overall satisfaction in life. And they decided to break the respondents into four groups: married men, married women, unmarried men, unmarried women. And sure enough, the happiest group of the four, the happiest group in life, was the married men. And the unhappiest group by far was the unmarried men. Kind of expected that. What surprised me was the second happiest group was the unmarried women. I didn't get that at first, but several married ladies explained it to me. after Adam and Eve had gotten to know each other for a while, Adam asked God, God, why did you make Eve so soft and attractive? And God said, so you would love her, my son. And Adam said, but why'd you make her so illogical and emotional? And God said, so she would love you, my son. Mostly, not always, but mostly, the wife is more committed to the marriage than the husband is, to the relationship of marriage. Mostly, not always, but mostly the problems in marriage are tied to the husband's selfishness. Guys were talking about their wives, and one of them said, "Yeah, my wife is like a speck of logic on a sea of emotion." And one of the guy's wives walked by and heard that, and she said, "Well, my husband is like a speck of awareness on a sea of oblivion." Creeping separateness usually comes down to the guy. One lady was talking to her lawyer about getting a divorce, and the lawyer said, "We will need grounds." And the wife said, "Can't you just say he wasn't there? I mean, even when he was physically present, he wasn't really there." Guys, do you know what that lady meant? Have you ever been talking with your wife and you kind of fade away? And then when you tune back in, you realize you've missed several minutes and you have no idea what she's talking about. Have you ever sat in a room watching TV, looking at your phone, vaguely aware that chaos is swirling all around you in your house, but you're totally in your own world? Have you ever gone to bed at night, guys, and heard your wife softly crying, and you have no idea why? And then you turned over and fell asleep? For the most part, not always, for the most part, creeping separateness is the concern of the wife and caused by the husband. And most husbands that I know don't want to get divorced. They just don't know how to avoid it. So today, as we look at the bottom of the fifth page that Paul wrote to the church at Ephesus, I want you to see three things that a guy can do to help his marriage get even better, to avoid creeping separateness. And ladies, you are invited to listen to this sermon today and nod and smile if you like. But I beg you, please refrain from turning to him and saying, "Yeah!" That will not help. Footnote. If you are not following Jesus right now, I do not expect you to do or believe anything I'm about to say. It'll sound crazy, and there's probably no way that you will have the slightest desire to even try it. But if you are following Jesus, I would expect that you would pay close attention, maybe even take notes, and go after this with all your heart, because what Jesus says always leads to the best, however else it may appear to us. End of footnote. First, three things for guys. First, in order for us to stay in our marriage well, we need to be aware of and demonstrate a sense of how amazing our wives are. Every person alive is made in the image of God, which means every lady on earth was made by God specifically great. Charles Williams says, when people fall in love, when someone is overwhelmed by another person with love, it's because they are connecting to the image of God in their beloved. They're seeing that other person as God meant them to be. They don't get distracted by the flaws. They see how that person could grow into greatness. Have you not ever seen two people wildly in love and you think to yourself, what does she see in him? Or what in the world does he see in her? Because from the outside, they do not seem attractive to you in any way. But every person has a beautiful beauty built into them by God. And falling in love is when you see that and you can't help but respond because they're so beautiful. So guys, the things that make marriage stop working, creeping separateness, it's when you allow yourself to be tricked into not seeing your wife that way anymore. At one point, you did. At one point, every time you looked at her, you go, wow. That girl is great. Wow, I would be crazy fortunate if I got the chance to do life with her. Wow, she is the most amazing person God has ever made. And she should know that. That's what you used to say. That's what you used to think. At one point in your life, you saw her values. You saw her worth. You saw her loveliness. And don't tell me you didn't. If you didn't, you wouldn't have married her. You married her. You saw it. And creeping separateness happens when you forget to see that in her. And you forget to say it. Sadly, in our self-absorption in life, guys, we husbands tend to forget to the point where we act like having her as our wife is a botherment. Gentlemen, do you ever make her feel, I'm just asking, do you ever make your wife feel like it might be better for you if she wasn't around? A couple of old guys were talking. One said, yep, our 50th anniversary is coming up. And his friend said, whoa, 50, are you going to do anything special? And the old guy said, well, for our 25th anniversary, I took her to Europe. And for our 50th, I'm thinking I might go get her. Contrast that to the man whose wife of 65 years died. True story. And at the funeral, somebody came up and said, 65 years is a long time to live with one lady. And the old man said, not nearly as long as it would have been without her. First thing, guys, in order for your marriage to be good, stop thinking about yourself all the time. And regularly let your wife know that you know she's great. And that you're lucky that God arranged for you two to do life together. Five important practices to avoiding creeping separateness under this category. Five things that you can try that will keep you away from the misery that dead marriages always bring to everybody involved. Number one, call your wife by her name. She has one. It used to give you goosebumps to hear it. When you talk to her, when you talk about her, use her name. I hate when guys I know say, I took the dog to the vet. I took the car to the garage. I took the wife to dinner. The wife? You took the wife to dinner? I hate that. And so does the wife. She has a name, call her by it. When you're talking with her, say her name. This small change can go a long way towards avoiding creeping separateness. Call her by name. Number two, call her regularly. And I know that's not her name, don't make a joke here. Call her, comma, regularly. When you're out of town, call her. When you're late from work, call her. When you've got no special reason to call her, call her. Hey, you just remembered her name. Call her. Very rarely are husbands penalized for calling too much. You have a phone. It's wonderful. Call her. Number three, write her. Notes are nice. Emails during the day. Texts during lunch. Words from afar. Let her know that you're thinking of her even when she's not around. A note on the table in the morning lets her know that you started today thinking about her. And if I was really smart, I would have left the note on the table today. Ah! Why don't I think of these? Bonus, if you post something on Facebook so that other people will get to see your words to her, even better. Number four, gift her. Flowers are fine. Presents are perfect. Restaurants required. Three words that all wives want to hear. Let's eat out. If you are in a restaurant, you see a couple laughing and talking and smiling and flirting and having fun. What do you know about them? Still dating. If you see a couple in a restaurant staring at their plates, picking at their food, quiet, what? Married. But it doesn't have to be. If the guy will notice his wife's value again and say so, it can be good again. Which brings us to number five. Tell her. If you see beauty in her, tell her often, loudly, so that she can hear it. Praise her, compliment her, acknowledge special stuff about her. If she's funny, say so. If she's good with money, let her know that you know that. If she's athletic, brag her up. If she loves Jesus, compliment her godliness. If she sings well, tell her. If she's a good mom, if she looks good, let her know that. If she makes the best baklava in the world, tell your church. That one I got. Care about what she cares about. Do things she wants to do. Help her shine in life. See life from her perspective. Here's the deal, guys. If you want to be married well, you need to court your wife every day she's alive. And I'm not sure how you do that between work and kids and softball and golf and fantasy football leagues and your friends and what's on Prime and unwinding and you hardly ever see her. I'm not sure how that happens, but that's what it takes for your marriage to work. And if that price is too steep, the Bible says, don't get married. But if you are, man up and live like you promised. By the way, Paul says the reason that all that matters is because good husbands model themselves after Jesus. And he did exactly that. In Ephesians 5 that Cheryl read for us, it says, husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her to make her holy, cleansing her by washing with water through the word. The way Jesus treats the church, the way Jesus does life with the church, that's our example for how to be a husband. Jesus is like a husband. We Christians are like his bride. And how's Jesus see us? He thinks we're great. He's called us. He's written us notes. He's given us gifts. He still does. And if you're open to it, Jesus happily goes through your life with you every minute, enjoying every minute, suffering every minute, right there with you. He will call you by name. He will compliment you as you make progress with him. He will make you feel like you're the most important person in the world to him because you are. The key to being a good husband, guys, Paul says, is treating your wife like Jesus treats the church, which means treating her with greatness and communicating worth to her all the time. Second, in order to protect from creeping separateness in your marriage, you have to protect your marriage relationship. Have you ever noticed that affairs never end up making anything better? The people that you know that have been in affairs, have you ever noticed that things aren't better at the end? It always leads to hurt, sobbing, mistrust, low self-esteem, disease, abortion, loss of credibility, loss of friendships, loss of reputation, more affairs, divorce, messed up kids, bitterness, suicide, death. Not joking. It can lead to death. A medical journal article that I read one time on heart attacks suffered by men having affairs ended with this poem. In a medical journal, the article ended with this poem. Heartbeats stay at normal rate when bedding down with one's own mate. But lying in another nest often leads to cardiac arrest. Note, playing married outside of marriage leads to lots of things, but better is never one of them. And mostly, not totally, but mostly, I've noticed that most affairs start because the husband is acting like a selfish pig. Either thinking his wife doesn't satisfy him anymore, so he's got a right to step out on her, or by so totally ignoring his wife's needs, she becomes vulnerable to another person's attention. Either way, the husband's selfish inclinations leads to ruinous behavior. So, here are the 12 steps that lead to an affair, so that you can back out of a bad road if you are headed down this one. These are from Dr. Carl Lenzi. He is a Christian marriage counselor in Colorado who, after working with thousands of Christians who had had affairs, realized there's a wildly predictable pattern by which we go from where we are to where we don't want to be and we think we could never go, and yet we do down these 12 steps. Dr. Lenzi says, no Christian ever suddenly finds himself in bed with someone he's not married to. It is a descending staircase with identifiable steps leading ever downward. And here are the 12 steps to really bad. Step number one, readiness. Things aren't going well at home. My spouse is not meeting my needs. I'm primed. Step two, alertness, which is an increased attractiveness to and watchfulness for members of the opposite sex, and we rationalize, it's okay to flirt and fantasize, I'm only human. Number three, an innocent meeting. This contact is by chance or by common activity, like at work or in your church. Number four, an intentional meeting. This is where you meet. It's a meeting that occurs on purpose because you've monitored the path of the other person, and we rationalize it's okay to play games. You got to find some way to liven up my work day. Step five, public lingering. You're talking with that person to the exclusion of others gathered around, and you rationalize it's okay. We're in public. Six, private lingering. It begins in a group context, but the conversation continues after the others are all gone and we rationalize it's okay, they chose to leave. Seventh step, purposeful isolation. This is a pre-planned meeting, time alone for what we say are legitimate reasons. We need to work together on that report. Let's get together sometime, or I'll drop by your house tonight and give you that material. Step number eight, pleasurable isolation. A jointly pre-planned time alone, just the two of you, just to have fun. And we rationalize, everybody needs friends. It just happens this friend of mine is of the opposite sex. Step nine, an affectionate embrace, holding and hugging each other. And we rationalize, everybody needs a hug sometimes. It has a bolstering quality. We're not developing an affair. It's okay to express support. I don't get much of that at home, you know. 10, a passionate embrace. Where the hugs begin to communicate more than support, there's an erotic quality, and we rationalize, I just got carried away. That'll never happen again. Step 11 is capitulation. That which we thought would never happen, happens. And we still rationalize, that won't happen again, but my spouse starves me. And step 12 is acceptance, where we admit we're having an affair out of choice, but we love each other so much, we're right for each other. And at this point, the person always says, you know, my marriage never was very good in the first place. Guys, if you see yourself on any of those steps heading down, you need to man up today and cut that relationship off totally. Now, the end. And don't give me that line, well, it's my job. Or, well, yeah, but I know what I'm doing. I got this. I won't go too far. Some of my very good friends in life have told me that over the years, and they're not married to their first wives anymore. Only guys who are the guys who said, you're right, this is wrong, I will end it today, now. And guys, if you're somewhere on those 12 steps, there's a better than average chance that your wife is too. Creeping separateness works both ways. It's probably not just you feeling that way, and you need to figure out a way to convince your wife that there's a good reason for her not to keep going down. But ladies, please know, I have friends who have looked for love where you're looking for love right now, if you're on those steps, and all of them have ended up with disappointment and hurt and really messed up kids. So I would encourage you to get off the staircase too for your own good. Do you remember when Jesus was tempted? Jesus came to live life so that he could win himself a bride. Hebrews 12 says he came for the joy set before him, and that joy was to woo us, to have us in a lifetime relationship with him. But somewhere along the path, he was offered a different experience to enjoy if he wanted to go that way, and we have a record of Jesus being given chances to head in a different direction away from us. Three times on one page he was given that chance. Do you remember what he said to those opportunities to step out? In Matthew 4, Jesus answered, it's written, man shall not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes out of the mouth of God, not just my physical desires, Jesus said. In verse 7, Jesus said, it's also written, don't put the Lord your God to the test. And in verse 10, Jesus said, away from me, Satan, for it's written, worship the Lord your God and serve him only. And if you can't remember one of those three when you're next tested, when you're next tempted to step away from what you know is right, if you can't remember any of those scriptures, how about this? Can you remember this? No, no, honey, I'm good. I could have another, but I probably should not. I got somebody at home, and if I stay, I might not leave alone. No, no, honey, I'm good. I could have another, but I probably should not. I gotta bid you adieu to another. I will stay true. Yes, I'm quoting a country song. I will do anything to help you stay where you need to be. Guys, protect your marriage from what for sure will kill it. And last, I said three, this is the third. Believe me, I saved the best for last. One final word of encouragement to husbands in the room. Guys, if you want your wife to respect you and stay with you and enjoy you, all you have to do is give yourself up for her. That's all you have to do. Live your life for her. Give your life to her. Stop living for yourself. Stop focusing on your needs. Stop being selfish. I heard about a husband who won a trip for two to Hawaii, and he went twice. If you want your marriage to be like marriage is supposed to be, all you need to do is make your wife your number one concern every day, meaning she is more important to you than your job, meaning she is more important to you than your kids, meaning she is more important to you than your recreation, more important to you than your friends, more important to you than your pleasure, more important to you than your money. Your wife is the most important, meaning what's best for your wife becomes the bottom line in every decision you ever make. You consider what's good for her before you think of what's best for you every time. And I'm not talking about henpecked. I'm not talking about nagged to death. I'm not talking doing whatever she demands. What one married guy told his unmarried friend that being a husband is a lot like work. He said, it goes a lot better if you like your boss. That is not what I'm saying. It is not being forced to do her will. What I'm saying is if you will choose to consider her first, somehow you both will win. You know about King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table, right? You know the biggest knight who was sitting there? Circumference. Ate too much pie. Do you know the knight no one ever expected to be sitting there? Surprise. Have you heard the story about the time Arthur was imprisoned by a neighboring king for a violation of the neighboring king's rules, and he was told that he would be executed unless he could answer this king's one question? And the king gave Arthur a year to go out and find the answer to this one question, or he would be executed. And the question that Arthur had to discover was, what do women really want? So Arthur went out and he searched and he searched, but after almost a whole year, there was still no answer to be found. Then someone told him that the old witch who lived outside of town would know the answer. But Arthur did not want to go ask her because she always required an incredible price for any information that she would ever give out. But on the last week of his year, he went to the old witch and he asked his question, what does a woman really want? The witch said she would give Arthur the answer, but only if Lancelot would marry her. This witch was an ugly, old, one-toothed, hunchback, smelled of sewage, made funny noises lady. Arthur decided whatever happened, he could not make his friend marry this woman. But Lancelot found out about that deal, and wanting to save Arthur's life, he agreed to marry the hag. At which point, the witch gave Arthur the answer. What does a woman really want? The witch said, she wants to be in charge of her own life. When Arthur told the neighboring king that, he immediately knew it was true and spared his life. The next day, there was a wedding ceremony for Lance and the witch, during the ceremony, surprisingly, Lancelot treated the repugnant lady with great tenderness and respect. When the honeymoon hour approached that night, Lancelot entered the bedroom where he beheld the most physically perfect, beautiful woman he had ever laid eyes on. Amazed, he asked what happened, and the girl said he had been so kind to her as the witch that day, she decided to be beautiful half the time and deformed half the time. And he could choose. Did he want her to be beautiful by day or by night? Lancelot immediately realized his predicament. If by day he would dazzle his friends and have a great companion for all his outings, but she would be the ugly old witch in the castle every night. But if he chose her to be beautiful at night, she would be known to all as his hideous, ugly wife. So after thinking it over, Lancelot decided, and he told her he would allow her to make the choice herself, which so pleased the witch that she decided to be beautiful both day and night. His kindness blessed their marriage because he had done what was best for her. And the moral of the story, according to some people, the moral of the story is, if a married woman does not get her way, things are going to get ugly. But I would say the moral of the story is that marriage only works right when the husband makes decisions that are in the best interest of his wife. And the model for all that, like I said, guys, Jesus is why we do it like we do it. Listen to how Paul's letter, the bottom of page 5, reads via the Message version. He says, husbands, go all out in your love for your wives, exactly as Christ did for the church, a love marked by giving, not getting. Christ's love makes the church whole. His words evoke her beauty. Everything he does and says is designed to bring the best out of her, dressing her in dazzling white silk, radiant with holiness, and that is how husbands ought to love their wives. So let's review. Last week, we talked about what it looks like to be full of God's Spirit. And the last marker we said, if you're full of God's Spirit, is a willingness to submit to one another. Like husbands and wives should submit to each other. Kids should submit to their parents. Workers should submit to their bosses. Submitting is a willingness to serve the other person. Jesus gladly submitted to his Father, and they were okay with that. Jesus, when he came to earth, gladly submitted to his mother, and they were okay with that. Submitting is not a bad thing. Christians submit to Christ, and we're okay with that. Submitting is not degrading. It is a thing we choose for the good of our relationship. We serve, we defer, we submit. Paul says, wives, submit yourselves to your own husbands as you do to the Lord. For the husband is the wife, head of the wife, as Christ is the head of the church, his body of which he's Savior. Now, as the church submits to Christ, so also the wife should submit to her husband, to their husbands in everything. From what I've seen, trusting your husband with your life is probably the hardest thing a lady is ever asked to do. Two ladies were talking once, and one of them said, "Do you think that your husband is hard to please?" And the other said, "Oh, I don't know. I've never tried." Ladies, you don't have to submit to your husbands, ever. But if you choose not to do that in your marriage, that will result in creeping separateness. And creeping separateness always results in some miserable living conditions. It's so far easier when the husband is killing himself for your good. I'm sure it's still not easy, but it's easier. Neither side is easy. It's hard for ladies to trust themselves to someone else. It's hard for guys to constantly think about anybody except themselves. But Paul says both sides are possible, and when done, marriage represents Jesus to the world better than anything else God ever thought up, which is why I think he thought it up. Why do people get married? To not be lonely, to have a companion in life. Everybody does. To see what it's like, to enjoy intimacy, to have kids, because you're already having a kid. Did you hear that a shotgun marriage is a case of wife or death? Why do people get married? It's expected to please their parents, to become financially secure. Did you hear about the lady who married a banker, and then she married an actor, and then she married a preacher, and then she married an undertaker? And they said, "Why would you marry a banker and then an actor and then a preacher and then an undertaker?" And she said, "Well, one for the money, two for the show, three to get ready, four to go." There are lots of reasons why people get married, but the better question is, why did God invent marriage? And Paul's answer here, towards the end of the letter that he sent to some friends of his, is that God thought up marriage so that every person in the world could see how his son loves them and how they can love him back, so that they can see that every day reflected in every husband and in every wife that they know. As a husband loves his wife, as a wife submits to her husband, we become a billboard for how Jesus loves us with all he's got and how we respond willingly, trusting him with our lives. So, if you're not married, ladies, don't get married until you find a guy who understands what Jesus did for all of us and proves that he will do that for you. And if you are married, ladies, your role is, like the church, to trust your husband as best you can, to respect, to encourage, to cheer for him, which is easier if he's always looking out for you, I admit, but that's your job. That kind of choice in life is your best shot at keeping creeping separateness out of your house. And guys, you can guard against finding yourself far away from everything that matters if you will do these three things. Number one, dig your wife and say so. Number two, be faithful to your wife, and to others, say no. And number three, do what's best for your wife until she says, "Whoa, you are worthy of my trust." You're in a play, and your role is to be Jesus. Lucky you. So, like Jesus, you love your wife. You see the great in her. You never mistreat or bad talk her, ever. Instead, you make every decision you make based on what's best for her. And if it feels like you're dying trying, if it's killing you to do what she needs done, perfect. You're probably doing it right. Folks, the good news is that if your marriage is dead or near dead or heading towards death, the good news today is that God makes dead things alive again. That's what he does. Jesus proved it. If we will let him, Jesus can change what your experience is. If we will ask him to, he can change us both from the inside out. If you want, Jesus can make all things new, including your marriage, including you. The end.